the June 12, 2012 special magistrate proceedings for the City of Daytona Beach to order. At the outset, I reviewed the minutes of May 8, 2012. They are acceptable, and with that, I've gone ahead and executed them. I've also signed a couple of satisfactions you've had up here, some other liens. Do we have any announcements before we commence this morning's proceedings? And if not, we'll proceed to our cases. But before we do that, will all the representatives from the City of Daytona Beach will be testifying at this morning's proceedings. Please step forward and be sworn.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the
truth? Yes. All right. The first item we have is a lien review. Edward G. Taylor, Anthony J. Taylor, Christopher J. Taylor, 950 Tomoka Road. Anyone here for the respondent? So please step forward.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sir, if you would please state your name and be sworn.
My name is Anthony J. Taylor.
Can you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
All right. As I understand it, we have a lien in the amount of two liens, one in the amount of $9,850, one in the amount of $250. We have interest that's accrued on both of those liens. In any event, that having been said, for a total amount of $10,756.27, and if I'm reading this correctly, this all emanates from a junk vehicle and the absence of a rental license. What's that?
Should I start with the history, just prior history? Just to give you an insight, my father was the actual owner of the property for years. Obviously let it go into, you know, quite a mess. Shortly thereafter, he passed away. Mr. Stenson looked at the property, noticed it was a mess, and He was very nice about the whole thing, but he gave me a certain amount of time to clean it up and make the repairs, and this is what it's escalated to. All the repairs have been made. He did give me the write-off on the okay that it's been done properly, but as time's gone by, this stuff has escalated monetary-wise. It just got out of control. I turned in some paperwork. Obviously, I didn't turn in the right paperwork or something to start this procedure. So this is where I'm at, sir, and the money is just burying me. myself, my house is in foreclosure. I'm just a mess.
All right, let me ask a question, too. When did your father pass away?
Gosh.
Give me a date.
November of... it's a blank to me. Do you recall, John?
2011, 2012?
I think it was 11, 2011.
Okay, at what point did you assume, I assume up to that point in time, he had management and control of the property?
I did, sir, yes. I apologize, I don't have dates, correct dates.
Hang on a second. Up until the time he passed away, I assume he had
correct
management and control of the property.
Yes, sir.
And obviously things weren't getting done at that point.
Yeah, he was terminal with cancer while living there.
Okay, and when did you take over management and control of the properties? Sometime after him passing away?
Yes, sir, immediately.
Just to help a little bit, there's a personal representative's deed that was recorded in April 2009. That sounds right.
Which?
Personal representative's deed, usually when someone...
No, there was nobody else involved in the properties besides myself and my brothers.
That's...
I don't know who's Steve.
No, personal representative's deed.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Does your father have an estate?
Yes, he left it to myself and my two brothers. That's.
And were one of you appointed a personal representative?
My older brother was, you know, the head of the whole thing, but he lives in New Jersey, so that's why I'm here.
Okay. You mentioned. It sounds like there was more work done than just removing a junk vehicle.
Yes, sir. Yep.
What else was being done?
Mr. Stenson gave me a list of things to do, such as a porch to be removed on the back, windows to be repaired, skirting around the home, and it was all successfully done after his you know, he like I said, he was very nice, came back a couple times and said, okay, Jay, go ahead and do this, do that, and I successfully did it. It took me a certain amount of time, but it was successful in being done.
Okay. And who owns this property now?
I still do, sir.
You do?
Yeah.
Is this the property that's in foreclosure?
No, my personal home is.
All right, well, the amount of the lien as it stands right now is $10,756.27. Do you have some compromise you want to propose or suggest?
I don't even know what to suggest. I understand that it's not going to be completely written off, but between me and my brothers, we should be able to give you some amount of money, but there's no way I could give you that amount. My brother is trying to refinance his house up in New Jersey. This is where this all came to be noticed. It came up on his, after he tried to refinance his home, it came up as a lien on the property. So I don't know the amount I should offer or say. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Why don't we try it this way? Why don't you come up with a number that you and your brother think you can reasonably afford, that in some fashion reimburses the city for their administrative efforts to
Absolutely.
Try to bring this property into compliance.
Okay.
In your mind's eye,
I've had enough time to discuss that with my brothers to, you know, see what we could come up with. Is $2,000 fair? I mean, that.
I don't know. I'll let you know, but it's a suggestion.
Yes, sir. All I mean, right. That's what we have discussed and put all our, you know, thoughts and money together, and hopefully that. That would be accepted.
All right. Let me talk to the city for a moment. All right.
I'm also a single dad.
All right. Good luck to you. Mm-hmm. Okay. This notice of violation, or this matter apparently started in September of 2010, and it wasn't in compliance until May 16th of 2011. The order went into effect January 11th, 2011. Okay. Can the city enlighten me as far as what was the additional work that the respondent was asked to do? Because from the looks of this, it just says junk vehicle and no rental license. And if I thought it was just a junk vehicle that somebody was thumbing their nose at the city and leaving it there, then I'd be aggravated. If it turns out it was a little bit more and there are some extenuating circumstances, then obviously I'm less aggravated. So somebody give me some context here as far as the city's concerned.
This case, it included junk vehicles, outside storage, windows, doors, skirting, the entire property. We had some roof damage over on the garage, and the occupational license. All those things were corrected. Ron Roberts, David Houlihan went out there for the occupational license. He failed the first two times, and he passed the third. So he did come into compliance with everything, but it was more than just a junk vehicle. Quite a bit more.
Okay, and I don't see a recommendation here from the city with regard to any proposed or possible compromise or reduction. Let's say the city.
The city's ready.
City holding fast at its $10,756.27.
No, the city is recommending $2,000.
When did this gentleman take over control of the property?
He is the only gentleman I have dealt with. I didn't have the opportunity to deal with his father. I spoke with him and his brother up in
the commencement of this. Mm-hmm. This is the gentleman you've been dealing with.
Yes, sir.
And I assume these are all old photos I'm looking at now?
Yes, sir.
So what does the place look like now?
It's completely clear. I think there's like one vehicle there that they use to go back and forth. Everything else is gone. The roof has been fixed over the garage. He's got his occupational license. He's repaired all the windows and screens. He's put skirting around the entire property. They removed the back porch, removed all the outside storage of junk and debris that was back there. The 18-wheeler is also gone, and currently running complaints.
So, sounds like what? There was a significant amount of work done by the respondent?
Quite a bit of work. He did quite a bit of work.
Once again, because the notice of violation didn't give me a whole lot of information. So, he did quite a bit of work. Okay. All right. I'm going to go ahead and let me ask you one more question. So, why did it take you from September of 2010 to May of 2012 to get this done? I thought it was
possibly because I was full time working, trying to handle it all on my own is probably the biggest issue.
What? I was just saying the compliance was May of.
Mr. Stenson was very nice in helping me throughout the whole procedure, you know, giving me plenty of time and stuff. He didn't, if I remember correctly, didn't rush me per se. He gave me plenty of time. Maybe that's why it got stretched out so long. He was very nice about giving me plenty of time to do it. Maybe that's why it stretched out for so long.
Right, so you were first notified September of 2010. 4 months later, an order's entered. 4 months later, you're in compliance. Is that right?
Again, sir, the dates are a blank to me, but that sounds correct. And again, he was nice enough to give me plenty of time. He worked with me hand in hand.
Okay. I'm going to reduce the sum of the fines to the sum of, or I'm going to reduce both liens and fines to the sum of $1,500 to be paid within 30 days.
Thank you.
If you pay within 30 days, speak with our city attorney. If it's not paid within 30 days, then it stays at $10,756.27. All right?
Awesome. Good. Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Case number one, O'Neill Family, W&HLP. Anyone here for the respondent?
Yes, sir, y'all.
Okay, hang on 1 second.
Thank you, Danny.
Yes, sir. If you would please state your name and be sworn.
John Birch.
Please write your name, please. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, this matter is here for the imposition of a fine, so let's hear from the city.
Good morning. My name is John Stinson, Code Enforcement Inspector, employed at the City of Daytona Beach. My qualifications are on file. This is case number SMG031241, City of Daytona Beach versus O'Neill Family W&HLP. Property address is 755 Berkshire Road. The violations were working without permits, exceeding the scope of the permits, and it's currently under repair or demolish.
Currently under an order to repair or demolish?
Yes, sir.
I just need to clarify one thing on the agenda. Mr. Birch was added the last time, and it's just not listed on here as he was joined in as a respondent. So it should be William O'Neill Family and John Birch.
Mm-hmm. All right, and this was to have been in compliance by June 12, 2012, and it is not. Being compliance by June 6th. Okay, and so we still don't have permits?
That's correct.
Nothing more has been done?
No, sir. The city is recommending $250 a day, capped at $15,000.
Okay. All right, what say Mr. Birch?
Well, since the last time, Your Honor,
father passed away four weeks ago. So I've been, when I left out of here, hostage call, I've been taking care of him hand in hand. I think the lawyer, they know about Mr. Birch passed away. He was 92 years old, so I just haven't done ACL. I took care of my dad up to his death. We put him away, so all I'm looking for right now is I've been out of town. I just got back. That's the realtor that came. I think Mr. O'Neill sent you a letter. I think he sent you a letter. And like I say, we've been working with this property for the last 8 months, and they gave us a permit. And I started work, and I done everything the city asked me to do to obtain a permit, and I done just what they asked me to do. And like I say, all those trees was on the property before I got there. I cleaned those trees up. So, I'm just asking for another, I need some time to go, and Ron said I'd be able to obtain a permit. Mm-hmm. The building inspector,
okay.
Ron O'Neill, Ron Roberts, Roberts. He told me all I had to do is to get it in my name, and I have it in my name now, and he would issue me a permit. So I'm surprised he's not here from the city.
Okay. Are you telling me it's your intent to try to rehab this structure?
Sure. That's all I do is do old houses. That's what I specialize in, and they know it. I also, last time they said I didn't work for, I've been working for the city, and I'm from Baxley, Georgia. And the kind of houses that I do, the house is in good shape. They didn't say that the house was structurally unsound. The house is a block house. The house has a block foundation. It just has a wood floor on the inside. So all that was when I started doing demo with the city gave me demo license. I demoed the house on Revelo, and they knew I took all of that material, hauled it across the bridge, to that house. That's why you see the material. That material was not just, and they knew. And there's no sense in them acting like they don't. We was on one accord. I would have rented a bulldozer and crushed it. I'd done a house right there by Splash Park. I took that house down board for board. It took me, 4 months? 4 months. And I wouldn't have never took 2x12s out, 2x10s out, tubs out. The tubs and all, Mr. Stimson and I know, we've been around, and it's time for me to just bow down, whatever, We've been around, but I don't know what else to say.
Okay, are you currently have an ownership interest in this house?
Is yes, sir. That's where my family and I am. That's my wife. That's where we were allowed to stay at. It's on a corner lot. It's a corner lot, and it's there because it's commercial also. He know I does commercial work. So in order for me to find another place, it was the ideal place because now it's in a residential and commercial. It's a business all across on the side of me. It's a business in front. So I'm just asking for the time. And the city gave me a permit. They the one that knew the house. That house been under demo. That house been under, just like it was for how many years? Almost, six, seven years before Mr. O'Neill bought it. The house was boarded up, and I had to go through the city and the code, and I had to go through, before they gave me a permit, they had to write it off. And they came out, they gave me a permit in September. And I didn't pick the permit up till I finished the demo job and got paid from the city. And that's when I started work. In time I started work, then they said, but they still saying the scope of work.
Okay, stop. I'm not interested in the history anymore. Tell me how long it's going to take for you to put that house together.
It'll take me 6 months, the time of that permit, to put that house back together.
How long is it going to take you to get permits for the house?
I should have the permits. If they don't...
Let's assume you don't. How long is it going to take you to get permits to build whatever?
It should take us about, 5 weeks? 4 to 5 weeks to get permits. I'll start on those ASAP now.
Okay. Is he even eligible for permits given the scope of the work he's looking at?
The only permit that the building department is going to give him is repair or demolish. Demolish.
Demolish.
Yeah. Yes, sir. That it's done. It's gone. It's completely gone. And now we have more material appearing on the property like this boat. Is that your boat?
Of course.
Okay, and one, it's in the wrong area. You got the dumpster on the south side of the building, but there's trash all over the property, and the dumpster's empty.
The dumpster's three-quarter full.
And
the
yet
it's... The dumpster is three-quarter full. The dumpster's been there. I'm paying on that dumpster. The dumpster was there ever since I started demoing the house.
Okay. The short version is that this case started in February, and we're now in June. The property has progressively gotten worse with no sign of any kind of progress. City's asking for $250 a day, capped at $15,000.
Y'all, I don't see where the house gotten worse. Where did it get worse at? I cleaned that whole property out. So where did the property get worse?
Well, it ain't looking great.
It was a mess before I got
it. Worse than done, but it ain't looking great. And if we were to... Okay, why is it the only permit he can acquire is demolition? I assume it has something to do with the percentage of damage to the property to begin with, or the extent of the damage to the property to begin with.
The extent of the damage on the property is almost all-inclusive. There's not one piece of that property that's going to be salvaged. All of this material that you see strewn about the property, like he said, it came from another location, be it Revelo, Orange Avenue, wherever. However, this material he's got out there, it's not going to work on that. All of that stuff needs to go away. It needs to be torn down.
Why did the city obtain, why did I obtain that permit? Why did you give me a permit to do the repairs? They still have my money. That's the key, too. The permit is still active. The city have not...
What permit are you talking about?
I have a permit for building, electrical, plumbing, and AC. I obtained all the permits that the city required me to do.
You're telling me you're holding active permits right now?
Yes, sir.
There is not one active permit on this property as of this morning.
You did not issue me a permit in February.
Personally, I didn't issue a permit at all.
Did the city issue me a permit?
What's the story on the permits?
The permit that he was...
Birch, just a second. What's the story on the permits?
The permit that he was issued. It was found that he exceeded the scope of the permit, so the building inspector voided the permit.
What was the permit to begin with?
The permit to begin with was for renovation. This is before the building inspector actually saw what he was attempting to renovate. He was misled, apparently, the building inspector was misled about the scope of work on the property. When the building inspector was notified of the actual condition of the property, he went out, looked at the property himself, and determined that Mr. Birch had exceeded the scope of the permit.
I don't understand the permit, and I don't understand what he was doing. How did he exceed the scope of the work?
It was the building inspector's understanding that there were minor repairs needed to be done on the property. Little roof work, maybe a couple of windows, little interior work. As you can see from all of the pictures, every window is gone. Every door is gone. There is no floor. There is no roof. There's just a bunch of material laying on the property, along with a dumpster and now a boat. And it's continuously generating complaints from citizens, commissioners, city manager, mayor. I get it at least once or twice a week.
Your Honor, can I say one thing? I don't mean no disrespect. The house has been in that condition with no windows, no doors, no roof, no floor. The ex-building inspector came out. They had a lady that you couldn't even go in the door until I contacted their office. They the one had to OAK the permit, and they did. They OK'd the permit. They knew this house because they have records of this house. Before I was in the buy the house, the city had a record ever since, 2 years back? Am I right? Alone. And they said, we're going to let you remodel this house, Mr. Bird. And they went out there and they looked at this house before the ex-building inspector left. That was Mr. Who was the ex-building inspector? And they know that. I mean,
I'm still trying to understand how he exceeded the scope of the permit that he had. Is what I'm hearing that he misled the building inspector into believing there was less work to be done, and then when the inspector saw it for himself, he concluded this is a lot more serious than the permit that I had contemplated?
Yes, sir. That is an email from the building official after he performed his inspection on the project, and that's what he came up with.
The head building inspector was Mark Criswell. He was the head building inspector. So they don't need to get that mixed up. Mark Criswell was the head building inspector for years. He was the one that went out to that property, AOK'd the property along with the code board, the code enforcement agency. And that was not you. That was the lady. Am I right?
That lady right there?
I don't know. All I said is I had to get everything. I ain't misled no one because I didn't fill the permit. The city of Daytona helped me to fill the permits out. So how did I mislead anyone? They knew the house, so how can I mislead someone? I didn't go out there and tear out now one. All I done is clean the property up and started putting it back. And that's what my permit said to do.
Amy, you wouldn't by any chance happen to have a copy of the April minutes, would you? Well, don't worry about it if you don't. I was just curious.
Did anyone recall the building inspector up?
Okay, so was the permit issued by Mr. Criswell and then Mr. Roberts made the determination the amount of work that was being done exceeded the scope of the permit?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Criswell would have been a chief building official, and in the interim, Mr. Criswell is no longer employed with the city, and Ron Roberts became the I don't know if it was acting before he became official, but he became the chief building official. So it was the decision of the chief building official ultimately. At that point, it was Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Roberts is on his way up right now.
So, as I understand it, he's issued a building permit that would have allowed him to renovate the property by Building Inspector A. Building Inspector B goes out there and says the work he anticipates doing exceeds the scope of the permit and stops work.
Correct.
Pictures are from last week.
And the city's position now is that the only alternative is demolition.
Yes, sir. These pictures from yesterday morning.
It's a block structure. The blocks look all good. He did not say that I have structure damage in the house. The blocks are good, the walls are up, the foundation is good. So all I need in there is a floor. I have a floor and I have a roof.
All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, did you want Mr. Roberts to speak?
Sure.
Hi. I'll answer any questions.
You can step up to the microphone.
Yes.
State your name, please.
Ron Roberts.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
We're talking about a property on 755 Berkshire Road.
Okay.
Trust you're familiar with it.
Yes. Yes.
I guess what I'm wrestling with is Mr. Birch was given a building permit by the city of Daytona Beach, I guess while under Mr. Criswell's tenure.
Yes.
And Mr. Criswell is no longer with us, and then it would appear that after you took over, you looked at the property and made the determination that the scope of the work that was being undertaken or anticipated exceeded
That's correct.
The permit that was issued.
Yes.
And so we're just trying to understand what you based all that on.
It was the permit was issued for sort of like a minor renovation. I didn't see that it was going to be a complete rehab, tear out, gut, anything like that. So it just, there was just so much work going on that was beyond just a minor renovation. And I don't remember what the permit value is. I don't have any information. But it was just too much work for... What's that?
There was a permit value?
Yes, there was a permit value. I don't know what that is right off
the bat. Presumably, Mr. Birch would have represented what amount of work or value of work he was anticipating doing?
Yes.
Do you recall what that is?
No, I do not.
Do you?
Yes, sir. It was electrical, plumbing, AC permit that was issued. So it was major work. I think it was like we just put in about $8,000 to $10,000, if I'm not mistaken.
That doesn't sound minor to me, if that's the way it is.
That's what's on the... But he gave me a permit for electrical. They knew it was major because he gave a... I pulled a permit.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Birch.
Didn't you tell me to obtain that, to get it in my name? I mean, can I ask a question? Didn't you ask me? It wasn't in my name at first. That was the one reason why you told me to get it in my name and to come back to you. Am I right?
Okay. That's fine. All right.
I can tell you that it definitely exceeded the scope of the work. From the work that was permitted, you go into a house and you have to do some minor renovations. That's fine. But these are a lot more than minor renovations. This is a complete gut and a lot of truss work. We don't have any plans. There are no plans. And when you do something like this, we need to see how that house is going to be laid out again, how the trusses are going to be attached, who's going to engineer the trusses. There's a lot of things that needed some really good paperwork, some good plans. We have none of that.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I'm going to do here, because I'm not making this call today. Let me tell you why. I've got this gentleman with his property rights wanting to develop his property, and I understand that. And like it or not, the city of Daytona Beach gave him a permit. You're telling me the quantum of permit he received was significantly less than the amount of work he was anticipating. Because had the city known the amount of work he was actually going to do, it wouldn't have issued him that permit. Okay? He, on the other hand, is saying, well, I asked for a permit. I put a permit value on there of $8,000 to $10,000, which isn't insignificant, which in and of itself should have indicated that there was going to be a fair amount of work that was going to be done. So I put the city on notice there was a fair amount of work that was going to be done. My point is, we are smack dab in the middle of a gray area here regarding how much work did he actually represent the city was going to be done, and did the city reasonably rely on what he suggested, and did what he suggest, was what he suggested false, misleading, or inaccurate?
It was inaccurate.
And I'm hearing both of you throw this stuff at me right here and right now, but I'm not going to do this. And hanging in the balance, to me, is the city's right to condemn a property, to require a property to be demolished that is in need of being demolished, contrasted with his property rights, whatever they may be. And so I'm going to continue this matter to the next meeting. And at the next meeting, I want to see this permit for myself because, and I'm telling you right now, Mr. Birch, I'll be honest with you, I'm leaning toward the city here because, as this gentleman has already indicated, there was a lot more than just the electrical work or the plumbing work or the what have you that was being done. There was a massive amount of truss work and a massive amount of exterior work that I could see for myself. So those are the issues that we're going to address at that next meeting, and I want to see that permit, the permit application. And I'm telling you right now, if I look at that permit and I hear both of you again, and that permit doesn't match up with what I could tell would be the quantum of work that would have to be done, that the city's going to win. If, on the other hand, I'm satisfied that you put them on notice sufficient to let them know this was going to be a major renovation, and they knew or should have known that when they gave you that permit, then you're going to win. That's as much as I can do. I'm not trying to sound Solomon-esque here, but you know, you guys are both throwing this stuff at me right now, and to me, this is more important even than just this little house in whatever state or condition it's in right now. So that having been said, I'm going to continue this matter to the July 10 meeting, and I'm going to want to see that permit, and we're going to talk about that permit. And at that point in time, I've already heard most of this, so I don't think we're not going to spend all day doing it. But we're going to see that permit, and at that point in time, I'll have, I think, what will be the last piece of information I'll need. And both of you guys will know where I'm coming from as far as what we're going to talk about. Okay, so this matter is continued to the July 10, 2012 meeting. Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Thank you, Robert.
All right, case number two, Piotr Gorodetsky. Anyone here for the respondent? We'll say the city.
Good morning, Mr. Vergaudio. I just did an inspection early this morning on the property. No repairs have been made. The owners of the property are out of town, Utah. I did speak with the fire inspector, Mr. David Well. He also was there yesterday, 6/11/2012, and no repairs have been made. He was unable to make it today and asked me to inform you on that. City's requesting $100 a day for noncompliance. Max at 10.
And max at what now?
10.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. Yeah. Correction, sir. 15.
Okay. All right. Based on our inspector's report, I'm going to go ahead and impose a fine in the amount of $100 per day, commencing June 6, 2012, and continuing each day thereafter until the property is in compliance or the fine has reached the sum of $15,000, whichever occurs first. Case number three, Piotr Gorodetsky.
Mr. Noel. This is the same property. Mr. Noel was unable to make it, okay. And he's also requesting $100 a day for each day of noncompliance for the fire issues.
There was a two-part order with this. He was supposed to be in compliance with life safety issues by May 18th.
Mm-hmm. All right, based on our inspector's report, I find the respondent failed to come into compliance as required. And I'm going to order him fined in the amount of $100 per day, commencing May 18, 2012, and continuing each day thereafter until the respondent is in compliance or the amount of the fine reaches the sum of $15,000, whichever occurs first. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I have new cases. Carl Woods, 535 Brentwood Drive. No one here for the respondent? We'll say the city.
Good morning. My name is John Stinson, code enforcement inspector, employee of the city. My qualifications are on file. This is case number SMG 061249, City of Daytona Beach versus Carl Woods. Property address is 535 Brentwood Drive. Parcel ID is 533715020010. It's a violation of a will fine order of outside storage of junk and debris. The city is asking for $150 for these instances.
For what now?
For the violation.
Did you say these three instances?
No, I just said the instances.
The instances. Okay, so I don't understand. Is the junk still there?
Yes, sir.
You're looking for $150 per day?
Flat one time, $150 for this particular instance. The fact that I'm bringing him here now,
$150 a day. He has not been fined since the will fine has been put in place. So this is his first fine. Yes, sir. The junk is there.
He's been told to remove it.
Yes.
And he hasn't removed it.
Correct.
And you have a will fine order in place.
Correct.
Per day.
It would be a per day fine.
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
No, it would be a per day fine.
Okay. Is there a per day fine right now?
No, there is not.
Okay. There is just a will fine.
So you're asking for a fine?
That's correct.
You're asking for a will fine?
No, I'm asking for him to be fined
okay.
in accordance with the will fine.
There we go. All right, we're good there. I assume I can do that now.
Yes.
So I can find him in noncompliance.
Yes, go.
Find him an amount. I guess you're saying $150 per day.
Yes, sir.
Or was that a fixed amount you were talking about?
In my mind, it was a fixed amount.
But he's
yes, it's been corrected that it's a per instance thing.
I'm not understanding it myself here. All right, we have a will fine in place for new case. All right, well, first off, I'm finding the respondent in noncompliance. I find that the respondent did, in fact, violate our will fine order. I'm just trying to fashion the fine now. My inclination is to say something along the lines of $150 effective immediately and another $75 per day for every day thereafter that the stuff remains out there.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's what I just said. I'm going to go ahead and fine the respondent the sum of $150 for his failure to remove these articles to date, and that fine will continue to accrue at $75 per day each day thereafter until the respondent is in compliance. Is this a single family?
Yes, sir.
Owner
occupied, capped at $10,000.
That fine will continue to accrue at $75 per day until the respondent is in compliance. Or the amount of the fine reaches the sum of $10,000. Okay? Case number 5, I have is in compliance. Case number 6, I have is in compliance. Case number 7, Eddie Anderson and Joyce Ann Anderson. Anyone here for the respondent? Sir, if you would please state your name and be sworn.
Ed Anderson.
Can you raise your right hand, please, sir? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, your name again?
Ed Anderson.
All right, the nature of the violation is parking in yard, outside storage, accessory structure, fencing. Do you agree these violations existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
Yes, sir.
All right, I've yes. responded in noncompliance. Mr.
No,
Inspector?
It's not storage. I drive them every day, but it's not storage. I have a truck and a car.
All right, I've responded in noncompliance. Mr. Inspector, how long is it going to take to come into compliance?
The next cutoff.
All right, the inspector is suggesting that you ought to be able to come into compliance by July 3, 2012. You going to be able to do that?
Yes, sir. I thought working on it already.
Okay. Do you know what you have to do to come into compliance?
Yes.
You spoke to the inspector?
Yes, the van is gone already. Okay. And I have a car in
Very
front.
Good. Then I'll order the respondent to come into compliance by July 3, 2012 or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter.
All right.
As soon as you got everything done, make sure you contact him because he's got to come out and do a final inspection.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you.
All right, thank you. I'm working on it right now.
All right, case number 8, Charles Van Steenberg. No one here for the respondent. What say the city?
Good morning. My name is John Stinson, Code Enforcement Inspector employed with the city. My qualifications are on file. It's case number SMG061253, City of Daytona Beach versus Charles Van Steenberg. Property address is 815 Lenora Street. Parcel ID is 533859010030.
The violations are referring to the housing long form. Ultimately, it's a repair demolish. I've had no contact. I've had to post the notice of violation, post a notice of hearing. We have also had a lot clearance done on this property.
You've also had a what now?
A lot clearance. It was overgrown. Right now, it's somewhat unsecure, definitely a hazard.
And time to come into compliance?
The next cutoff.
All right. Based on our inspector's report, I find the respondent to be in non-compliance. Order the respondent to come into compliance by July 3, 2012, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Case number 9 I have is in compliance. Case number 10, Jimmy L. Sanders.
Jimmy L. Sanders.
Can you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Parking and yard. Do you agree this violation existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
Yes, it did.
All right, I find the respondent non-compliance. Mr. Inspector, how much time to commit to compliance?
The next cutoff.
All right, Mr. Sanders, the inspector seems to think you ought to be able to come into compliance by July 3, 2012. Are you going to be able to do that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are we looking for a will fine? Will we be looking for a will fine at some point in time here?
No, sir.
All right, very good. All right, then I find, did I already find a non-compliance? All right, order the respondent to come into compliance by July 3, 2012, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. And you know what you need to do to come into compliance?
Yeah. Either pour another driveway or get rid of the car.
Okay. So just make sure you call for an inspection.
I spoke with him.
Sound like a little overkill right now, but call for the inspection anyway because he finishes out the case with the paperwork.
All right.
Thank you.
All righty.
Okay, I have miscellaneous business. James W. Corwin and David Schweibisch.
Good morning, Special Master. Doug Daniels here, representing Jim Corwin. Mr. Schweibisch is not here. The problem that we've had is this, is that between the time that the violation was noted, between the time that the original violation was this, it was working on a house, doing some work on the house without pulling a permit. Mr. Corwin is here. He will testify that he had talked to a contractor about going out there and doing the work. He thought the permits were pulled. They were not pulled.
Let me interrupt you one moment. Mr. Corwin is a client of mine, and I'm handling a civil matter for him. It doesn't have anything to do with this property. But that having been said, I need to make that disclosure. So is the city wanting me to proceed with this? Or is the city preferring to that this matter be referred to the, and I apologize, I should have looked at the agenda before this morning. Had I done so, I would have alerted you all to this. I'm deferring to the city as to whether I'm proceeding or go to the code enforcement board. It's whatever the city's preference is. You will not hurt my feelings one way or the other.
Yeah,
what do you want to do?
Just discuss it with Mr. Garcia, and we don't have any problem going with
it. All right, let's go.
Special Master, what I'd like to do is to give you a copy of this. What we have here is a email. It's an email that I sent to Mr. Jackson here, the city attorney. And what I'm saying here is, you know, that the Mr. Corwin no longer owns the property. What happened between the time that the violation was noticed, the doing the work without a permit, And the time that the fine was imposed, Mr. Corwin sold the property. So at the time the fine was actually imposed, he no longer owned it. And that since then, both I had talked to Mr. Jackson, and the city said, well, if you guys can come into compliance, then that would go a long ways towards helping you out with your code problem. And we did everything we could to come into compliance, but we needed Mr. Sweetbush's permission to go onto the property. He does not respond to me. I call him, I send him emails. He doesn't respond to me. He doesn't respond to Mr. Corwin. Mr. Corwin sends him emails, you know, calls him. He doesn't respond. And the lawyer that represented him at the closing, Ron Johnson, he doesn't respond to Ron Johnson either. And if you look at the emails that are attached to my email, these are emails from Ron Johnson to Mr. Sweetbush, which indicate, well, not only indicate, they establish conclusively that he knew about the code violations when he closed on this, that Mr. Corwin told him there were code violations. He understood there were code violations. He understood what they were. He had the paperwork. He knew when the hearings were, but he wanted to go ahead and close anyway. So we don't have a situation where you're going to have some innocent citizen coming up out of the woodwork and saying, hey, city, I bought a piece of property that had code violations that I didn't know anything about. Of course he knew. And he has done nothing to try to correct them, and he's done nothing to try to allow us to try to correct them. I have another email that... This is another email that I sent to Mr. Jackson, and what this one does is it attaches a list of the work that was actually done on the property. Mr. Corwin was under the impression all they were doing was repairing a few windows. It turns out they did a little bit more than that, but not a whole lot more. If you look at the last page, there is an email from a realtor that describes the work that was done, the reason why the realtor did the email instead of the actual contractor, is that the contractor, I guess, is verbally challenged and wanted the realtor to actually put it down on paper for him. But what he did was he repaired a roof. There was a leaky roof, and then he... covered an exterior wall with plywood and repaired some windows and connected a drain that was in the house to the actual sewer system, because apparently it was just flowing out on the ground. That is the work that was done. The work seems to be even still rather minor, and what we have is a person who bought the property knowing the code violations were there. Now, if you look at the statutes, this is chapter 162, and I would refer you down to section 162.06, parenthesis 5, code enforcement procedure. What this section seems to say, I admit that it's not as clear as it could be, but what it seems to say that if you've got an owner that sells a property before the actual lien is imposed, the actual fine is imposed, that owner is not responsible and that the new owner is. And there are various qualifications that the owner has to meet. He has to disclose in writing the existence and the nature of the proceeding to the prospective transferee. Well, we have emails from Sweetbush that show that he knew exactly what was going on. He knew what the code problems were. He knew when the hearings were going to be. Deliver the prospective transferee a copy of all pleadings, notices, and materials relative to the code enforcement proceedings received by the transferor. I do not know if Mr. Johnson sent him everything, but he knew enough to know exactly what the proceedings were. what the problems were and when the hearings were going to be. So I would say that, that this one would have been in substantial compliance, but I cannot represent to you that it was in total 100%. C is disclosed in writing to the prospective transferee that the U owner will be responsible for the compliance with the applicable code and orders and the code enforcement proceeding. And Mr. Sweebush, in his emails to Mr. Johnson, he clearly understands that he is going to be the person responsible. And the final one is notice to the code board that that indeed the transfer has taken place, and that was done. Indeed, the fine that was levied in the name of both gentlemen. It was levied in the name of Mr. Corwin and Mr. Sweebush. So both of them are noted in the fine as being respondents. The existence of the fine has caused problems for Mr. Corwin. He's got other real estate matters here in Volusia County. He's been trying to buy and sell property. And the lien there always comes up, and it's always something that is a problem for him. The difficulty that we have, of course, and the fundamental difficulty that we have, is that without being able to get in touch with Mr. Sweebush, without being able to get his permission, there's nothing we can do. We can't fix the problem. We've never been able to fix the problem. As soon as we sold it to him from that point forward, we had no authority to go out on the property, to pull permits, to do anything. You know, we wanted to fix it, but we just can't do it. There's just no way. Sweebush is the only one who can, and he just seems to ignore the issue. And if you look at the statutory scheme seems to anticipate this kind of situation and to let the owner who informs the new owner that there is a code problem, that the new owner is the one who is really going to be responsible, not the old owner. If you have any questions, I have Mr. Corwin here, and he can fill you in with the details on exactly what happened, when, and how it all came about.
Okay. When were we supposed to be in compliance?
It'd be January 4th, 2012. I'm looking at the order. That's when the fine was imposed.
All right, I'm sorry, say that again.
I said I'm looking at the order. The fine was imposed effective January 4th, 2012.
I sold the property on November.
Sorry, you need to be sworn.
You've got to be sworn.
Please okay. Your name, please.
James Corwin.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear or affirm
that
the testimony
provided
is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention that I sold the property November 2011. So it was prior to the, quite a bit prior to the fine.
Okay.
I do have something to say regarding that, Mr. Coach.
Pardon?
I said I did have something to say regarding. Okay.
Yes.
Just as discussed, Mr. Dan's correct. We've talked about this, and I've looked into the history of the case. And there's a couple of things that's just some interesting quirks and the quirks that go along with the points that were made by Mr. Daniels. Even though the property was apparently sold in November, at least by the indication of this gentleman, the deed was not recorded until, I believe it was February. I know it was after the cold lien was recorded that the deed was recorded. That alone creates a first-in-time, first-in-right as it relates to the position of the lien. But in addition to that, Mr. Daniels points out, he refers us to chapter 162, I think that's 0.06. And something I think overlooked in that is that if he looks at the last sentence of that section, it says, if the property is transferred before the hearing, the proceeding shall not be dismissed, but the new owner shall be provided as reasonable provided a reasonable period of time to correct the violation before the hearing is held. This property was not transferred before the hearing. It was transferred in the middle of these proceedings, just as he indicates. This was going on. They made the decision to transfer. We have these situations arise repeatedly. And when those situations arise, typically we will recognize that someone else has been added, but we will add them. We will not substitute. And ultimately, recognizing at least this claim of some interest resulted in Mr. Swambish being added. However, his name is not added in the the language of the lien itself. His name is only added in the style. In the lien itself, the reason he's being affected is because as owner, it's affecting the property, which now he's saying he owns, and we understand that. The whole issue of their inability or ability to access the property is an issue that they both seller and buyer recognized existed at the time they were doing their transaction, and somewhere in there the seller needed to protect or establish some right or interest in its ability to still assure that they satisfied their obligations as they passed those obligations along from one side to the other and held on to whatever responsibilities that were still their responsibilities. In this situation, their responsibility wasn't relieved. It's not relieved by statute. It wasn't relieved by the board, and it wasn't relieved by the city for the property to come into compliance. And we have never taken a position that in the middle of a proceeding that you, if you just pass it on, if no one relieves you, that you're free from having the obligation to remedy the problem, the noncompliance. I realize it's a problem. I spoke with Mr. Daniels and understand their expressions of this problem in saying that, well, I think the understanding is that the actual owner is someone out of out of state who, if I understand right, may have had very little physical involvement in the property or any physical involvement down here at all. But once again, to put us in the middle of trying to settle or solve the seller-buyer transactional relationship and what they should have done in terms of protecting or satisfying responsibilities in the interim or as part of their transaction wouldn't be fair to the city, and the city has no means or nor the citizens to sit down now and start trying to shuffle through to try and create a way to go after the person in Illinois who picked up a property that had that Mr. Corbin had the responsibility to remedy without any relief. I mean, without ever having been relieved of that responsibility in any other means. And I would just point out my perspective of that statute is it's one that keeps a owner free from the presumption of fraud. It's not really establishing a responsibility to the board or the city in terms of the manner in which they should go, other than if it happens before the hearing, recognizing that a new person is responsible before the hearing.
Just a couple more points. You know, this is sort of like a civil injunction kind of proceeding. If somebody doesn't do what a court orders them to do, then what you go in for is civil injunction. And civil injunction, those kind of fines can only be imposed if the person actually has the ability to come into compliance. And what we have here is a gentleman that has no ability, no way, no how to come into compliance with the city's order that the property be rectified. There is absolutely nothing that we can do. If you take a look at the statute, it talks about the property being transferred before the hearing, and in the context, I think it's pretty clear that it means the property transferred before the hearing where the fine is imposed. I don't see any disadvantage at all to the city, Mr. Special Master, and the reason for that is that it still has the lien against the property in question, the one that created the problem. It still has the lien there. All we're doing is saying that Mr. Corwin should not have a lien against all of his other properties here in Volusia County, that he should not be responsible, that the lien should not be against his other properties. The property in question, there's still a lien on it, and there will be a lien on it until that one is taken care of. And we do wish that we had the authority to go in there and take care of it. We would have taken care of it a long time ago, but we do not. And the new owner has been somewhat of a surprise to us. He has been a very much an absentee owner and very, very uninvolved. One other thing that Mr. Corwin just brought up is that Ron Johnson is the one who closed this transaction, and we have no explanation as to why it took so long to get the deed recorded. We would have assumed the deed would have been recorded immediately. It does not seem to have been back during the time when the clerk's office was slow. We would have thought that in a matter of a week or two, it would have been recorded. That was something we had no control over. Do not know why that happened that way.
That's the first I'm hearing of it. That's the first I'm hearing of it. I haven't heard that before.
But nevertheless, Mr. Kelly, one point of clarity is that when the fine was imposed, it was Mr. Corbin was still the owner of the property, and he had the means and ability. I say when the fine was imposed, when the order, I'm sorry, you're correct, if you're going to correct me there, when the order requiring compliance was put into place, Mr. Corbin was the owner of the property.
Right.
And he had the means and ability to, at that time, bring the property into compliance. Instead, he transferred the property.
I was told I wasn't owner of the property. So I couldn't go in there.
After you sold the property in November, you were not the owner. The recording of the deed made no difference. It just put people on notice.
All right. Well, I'm looking at an amended order of noncompliance that allowed Mr. Corwin until December 7, 2011 to come into compliance. I'm looking at a warranty deed dated November 23, 2011, signed by Mr. Corbin. A warranty deed by which he divested himself of all ownership and control over this property. We see documentation that says Mr. Corwin put the prospective buyer on notice of all of these items and the fact that they had to be attended to. I can only assume everyone presumed Mr. Schweibisch was going to be reasonable. No guarantee that he was going to do the work, but at least that he would be reasonable. Now I'm hearing he's non-communicative with the seller's lawyer, his own lawyer, and everyone else. There's no doubt in my mind after November 23, 2011, Mr. Corwin did not have the ability to affect compliance or to bring the property into compliance. And now we get into the equities of whether, given those circumstances, his other properties should be bound by a lien that, in fact, Mr. Schweibisch, as it turns out, is primarily responsible for allowing to occur, given these circumstances. There's nothing about, I understand, we don't allow people to just divest themselves of their responsibilities, but at the same time, we can't keep people from transferring title to the property just because they are in noncompliance. And if you have a gentleman here, such as this, who has the right to sell his property, who sells his property, who notifies the prospective purchaser of the lien violations, who attempts to communicate with them to rectify, receives no cooperation whatsoever. Are we still going to penalize him for matters outside of his control because we want to maintain a lien on everything else he owns?
No, we don't.
Okay. The lien will remain on this property as far as Mr. Schweibisch is concerned. As far as Mr. Corwin's other properties, and I don't know what, if any, lingering interest he may have in this one. I don't know if there's a mortgage. I don't know anything about it. But as far as this property goes, the lien remains in full effect. As far as Mr. Corwin's other properties are concerned, this lien shall have no effect on those properties whatsoever. I don't know if I've said that correctly, but there you go.
Okay.
Now,
we personally release Mr. Corbin from this property.
We're releasing him from this property.
Right. Which would release.
What, if any, interest he may have in this property is still subject to the city's lien. And of course, the lien still maintains its full vigor, if you will, with regard to Schweibisch. But as far as Mr. Corwin and his other properties, this lien's deemed satisfied. Okay. Anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Master.
All right. Good luck to you. Okay. Okay. Do we have any other miscellaneous? Mr. Birch, what's up? You found what?
I found the paper.
What paperwork?
You told me to get that. I slowed down. The city got all these signatures and everything.
You talk about the permit?
Everything.
All right.
I applied for. I even got the paper with Ron Roberts. Just told me to just to get a structure. If you read them all right there.
All right. Well, so I'll take your word for it. Now, I've already told you. Yeah, hang on. Take it back, but you don't give it to me.
Oh.
I'll lose it.
I was so happy when I thought I had misplaced it.
All right, well, you hang on to that and plan on bringing it back with you in July.
Okay. Thank you.
Because I already told the city that's when we would have it heard, so that's when we're going to hear it.
Oh, thank you, y'all.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, do we have any other business to be brought before the special magistrate?
Okay.
No. Tony, I need a primer on something here.
Yes.
No, I don't. Okay. All right, let me just ask something generally. Do people acquire vested rights in building permits?
Don't know the answer, but I...
I don't either, but it's something that's gnawing at me. And I'm not here to say or suggest that anyone that might have been before me has risen to that level. I'm just curious as to whether it's an article you can even acquire a vested right in. I know, like in development orders and things of that nature, you can acquire vested rights.
We had, and I'll go back to, and you may recall this from Code Board, we had a Trianon type issue, and this is more that type of issue, and I'll give you more background on that, that arose back on the code board related to the guy with the tennis court, who's an attorney there off of Halifax, where they went forward with the question of the issue of once they detrimentally relied, would we be able to rescind? And if we didn't, would there be the issue of damages, which would be the Trianon question? I guess it's centered more around that type of a question as relates to the issuance of a permit. Is there a point where it reaches a point of detrimental reliance? The most complete legal answer I know.
Okay, good enough. Anything anyone else wants to talk about? Air out.
Well, I'll tell you that
while we're here.
I guess this is partly the case, but nevertheless, I think it's something I can tell you now, and we'll address it at the future proceeding. I believe, and I was just speaking with my inspector, that the statement that the only permit obtained is a demolition permit is an incorrect statement. I mean, it may take a whole lot more things to get something else, but that statement itself, as a flat statement, is not a correct statement. And we'll make clarification of that to the magistrate. I think that's an erroneous statement.
Well, somebody just needs to connect the dots between the conclusion that the only permit available is a demolition permit and what I'm seeing on the monitor, because what I see on the monitor doesn't look very promising. But you've just got enough interaction between the respondent and the city to cause a little bit of heartburn as far as making cataclysmic decisions here, but cataclysmic decisions will be made. 10-4. All right.
Okay.
Anything else?
That's it.